Mark chapter 13, verses 32 to 37. Your kingdom come when? Well, it's actually very clear. Mark chapter 13, verse 32. Jesus said, "No one knows about that day or hour, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father." Jesus said, verse 33, "Be on your guard, be alert, for you do not know when that time will come." And Jesus said, verse 35, "Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know when the owner of the house will come back." It couldn't be clearer. You don't have to be a great theologian to understand it. Only God the Father knows when he will send the Son, Jesus Christ, to wrap up history as we know it. Yet, despite the clarity of these words, predicting his return has been a preoccupation for many in the church down through the years. The best example I've come across this week was from 1842. Now, the dates are very important here. In 1842, a Roman Catholic priest wrote a book predicting that the world would end in 1847. Being a good Catholic, he sought the church's authority to publish the book, and the church granted permission to publish it in 1848. Well, we laugh, it seems ridiculous, but all the time people are taking hold of their diaries and thinking, how can we work out when Jesus is going to return? We'll discover today that is not the way to use our diaries. Let's remember these are things that are not confined to previous generations. We only have to turn the clock back 2 years. As we approach the beginning of the new millennium, there were countless groups and individuals predicting the end of the world, many claiming to be Christian. Down through the centuries, particular dates have generated great excitement, and regardless of the date, whenever there's a crisis in the world, there's speculation about the return of Jesus Christ. As I think of this current situation, I always think of my grandmother. She died some years ago. But I know that if she were alive today, she was a lovely Christian woman. And whenever I went to visit her, we'd pray at the end of our time together. And she'd look up at me and say, "You know, Paul, I'm sure the state of the world as it is today, I'm sure that the Lord is going to return soon." Because, of course, she was born in 1904, and at the beginning of the 90s, when she would say those things, the world had changed. With the planet in turmoil, some people instinctively wonder if we're about to witness the end of the world. And if we're Christian, that means the return of Jesus Christ. Well, look, even when the planet is in such turmoil, Jesus says to us, and this is the first point, watch, don't speculate. Verse 32 again, "No one knows about that day or hour, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father." Watch. Watch is the key word in these verses. See, if we look at the end of verse 34, we see the words, "keep watch." Look at verse 35, "therefore, keep watch." And verse 37, Jesus wraps it all up, this little section, by saying, "What I say to you, I say to everyone, watch." So that's what we should be going away with this morning, watching. But watching does not mean speculating. Sorry, we've got to keep flicking back and forth. We're back on verse 32. Watching does not mean speculating. See again, "No one knows about that day or hour, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, only the Father." No one knows, not even the Son. So we're not to be looking over the horizon with a telescope trying to work out the date of Jesus' return. What a verse this is. Now, these are words that no one would fabricate. It's a statement that's troubled Christians down through the years, where Jesus says that he does not even know. It's troubled Christians, but it's entirely consistent with Jesus' words. He says at the beginning of the Acts of the Apostles, when he's about to return to the Father, the disciples ask him, verse 6 of Acts 1, "Lord, are you at this time going to restore the kingdom to Israel?" Jesus said to them, "It's not for you to know the times or dates the Father has set by his own authority." Whenever it comes to the issue of the arrival of God's kingdom in all its fullness, Jesus always says, "Only the Father knows when that will be." Verse 32 is consistent with that. And not only consistent with Jesus' teaching on this, his return, but consistent with his place in the Trinity. Over and over, Jesus remarked, "I only say what the Father tells me. I only do what the Father commands me." The Son, you see, is willingly obedient to the Father, having willingly put himself under the authority of the Father. And so, even to this day, The Son is waiting for the Father to tell him to return and to wrap up history as we know it. So even now, verse 32, no one knows about that day or hour, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. It's a magnificent statement because it rules out any speculation or any claims to have inside information. Jesus does not know, so no one walking this planet knows. Jesus does not know, so don't go searching for a clue in his words. Jesus does not know, so don't believe anyone who claims that he told them something. Yeah, if you meet someone who says they do know, they're the liars and deceivers that Jesus had just warned about back in verses 21 to 23. You see, they're claiming to have been let in on a secret that the Father has not even told Jesus Christ. How ridiculous is that? Yet actually, I'm amazed how many thinking Christians allow themselves to be taken in by this sort of thing. Every few years, there's another scheme to discover all the hidden truths of the Bible, or how to unlock the book of Revelation, or whatever it is. A few years ago, it was the Bible Code. Do you remember that? These schemes promise to tell you the identity of the beast in Revelation, the date of Armageddon, and so on. Will we learn this verse so that it springs to mind the moment we meet anyone suggesting that they know the date of Jesus' return? Mark chapter 13, verse 32, I've deliberately kept repeating it. No one knows about that day or hour, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. See, here is why the Jehovah's Witnesses are so outrageous. In predicting the date of Jesus' return, they've not only failed to read this verse, but they are actually saying that they know something that even Jesus Christ does not know. Well, it's obvious why they do it. It's a very effective recruiting device. It generates great interest. It puts real fear into the unsuspecting to suggest that Jesus is about to return. The founder of the Jehovah's Witnesses, C.T. Russell, predicted the return of Christ in 1874 and the end of the world in 1914. And indeed, no fewer than seven times in their short history, the Jehovah's Witnesses have predicted the return of Christ. Each time, the result has been a dramatic increase in the number of people signing up to join them. But I don't need to tell you what happens the year after the prediction has not come true. The numbers go down again. Speculation about the date of Jesus' return is foolish. And these words of Jesus should warn us against getting into the whole guessing game. These words of Jesus should help us to equip us to spot false teachers who make predictions about Jesus' return. And this verse, verse 32, tells us how to use our diary. Don't speculate. Don't be hunting around in your diary for the date of Jesus Christ's return. It's not there. Well, first point, watch, don't speculate. Secondly, watch, don't be skeptical. Verses 33 to 35. You see, 2,000 years have passed since Jesus said these words. So is he coming back at all? When Jesus doesn't return today, we think he won't return tomorrow. So we become complacent and lazy in the Christian life. Hence this mini parable of Jesus in verse 34. He says it's like a man going away. He leaves his house and puts his servants in charge, each with his assigned task, and tells the one at the door to keep watch. When I first left school, I worked in a bank, a high street bank. I better not tell you what bank it was, it will become clear why I better not tell you. I was just one of a group of irresponsible young lads working in the bank. Work was a laugh. When there was no supervision, we very quickly stopped working. I'm kind of ashamed of it now. I wasn't a Christian at the time, you'll be pleased to know. In the bank, it was definitely true that when the cat was away, the mice would play. When the boss went out of the office, once we thought he wasn't coming back for the afternoon, maybe he was off playing golf, having a jolly. Well, we were going to have a jolly as well. We were up to all sorts of things. I better not tell you which bank it was. But they've changed their name now. Now look, that is the danger for the Christian. The master has gone away, verse 34. We, his servants, have been given the responsibility to continue in the work of proclaiming the gospel. But the master left 2,000 years ago. When the cat's away, the mice going to play? We can so easily be lulled into thinking, well, he won't return. As I've tried to honestly examine my own life this week in the light of this, I realise this is my problem. Oh, intellectually, I believe Jesus will return. I believe the Bible. I believe he'll return at any time intellectually. Verse 35, you see, therefore keep watch, because you don't know when the owner of the house will come, whether in the evening or at midnight or when the cock crows or at dawn. I know intellectually that Jesus Christ could return tomorrow, but I don't actually live it. See, the way I live shows me that I don't fully believe verse 35. Of course, I wouldn't venture a guess at when he will return, but my actions demonstrate that I've ruled out tomorrow being the day. There are people that I've known for years, family members, who've never heard the gospel, the good news about Jesus Christ from my lips. Well, if I really believed that Jesus Christ could return tomorrow, I'd visit them this evening to tell them, wouldn't I, if I loved them? So as one of his servants in verse 34, I've not got on with the task that the master has given me to do. Because Jesus doesn't return today, we think he won't return tomorrow. We become skeptical about his return. So Jesus says, verse 33, be on your guard. He says, be alert. And as we've seen already, the big thrust is watch. Don't be skeptical. And that's actually where the rest of Mark 13 helps us. For some, all this talk of Jesus coming again will all be sort of pie in the sky, sort of out of touch with reality. But as we read chapter 13, we realize that what Jesus is talking about is completely rooted in the real world. Chapter 13 is the world we're living in. Just look back at some of those verses. He speaks of catastrophe on the world stage, verse 7. When you hear of wars and rumors of wars, don't be alarmed. Such things must happen. But the end is still to come, he says. See, apart from all the obvious points of conflict, there are wars all over the world at the moment. Did you know that since the end of the last world war, there's not been a week gone by where there's not been a war somewhere in the world? This is our world. Catastrophe on a world stage, persecution of the church, verse 13. All men will hate you because of me, says Jesus. We've witnessed it in these last weeks in Pakistan, haven't we? But it's been happening for years in communist and Muslim nations. People hate Christians. Catastrophe on the world stage, persecution of the church, appalling sacrilege beyond belief, verse 14. When you see the abomination that causes desolation. Now that is a particular event in history that we'll touch on in a moment. But we've witnessed appalling loss of life in the terrorist attacks of September the 11th. Catastrophe on the world stage, persecution of the church, appalling sacrilege beyond belief. False teachers, verse 22. False Christs and false prophets will appear and perform signs and miracles to deceive the elect, if that were possible. Well, people have been led astray by others for years. I've heard many stories of lives wrecked by religious charlatans. In some churches, every few years, sees a new phenomena, new miracles, you've got to believe. You see, as Jesus speaks of his return at the end of chapter 13, he's been speaking of a situation that is the world we live in. This is not all pie in the sky. This is reality. A world that is full of wars and rumors of wars. And of course, it is these things that lead people to think about the end of the world. These are the things that make us wonder if our planet is going to self-destruct. Well, it's not going to self-destruct. Jesus is in control. But they make us think of the end. So we've prayed, rightly so, about the events of September the 11th, just again this morning. Several people have said to me since that as they witnessed the events unfolding, they wondered if it was the end of the world. And since then, with the present conflict in Afghanistan, it's crossed the minds of many people to ask where it will end. What are the Americans saying? When they finish in Afghanistan, they will go on and hunt them down wherever they are, these terrorists, Somalia and so on. What does that make you think about? Well, some people have said to me that it makes them wonder that if that begins to happen, that the Muslim world will break the coalition that Tony Blair and others have created. Would that lead to the whole world being divided in two, at odds, at war, on a scale that we cannot begin to imagine? We live in a shaky, tottering world. That's the world Jesus was speaking into when he spoke of his return. Not just pie in the sky. Don't be skeptical when he speaks of these things. Don't think it's not going to happen. And just as we must not speculate, we must not go to the other extreme and think it's not going to happen. Not least of all, because here in Mark 13, one major part of this chapter has already come true. Now, without getting all technical, there are two strands running through this chapter, like ropes intertwined. In verses 1 and 2, we see Jesus is speaking about the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem. In verses 24 to 26, you'll see the return of Jesus Christ is what Jesus speaks of, the return to bring judgment on the world. And Jesus speaks about these two events because one is the picture of the other. The destruction of the temple is a picture of final judgment. Jesus speaks about them together because one is a pledge of the other. The destruction of the temple is the proof that Jesus will return in power and great glory to judge the world. Now, the temple was destroyed in AD 70. But when Jesus spoke of the destruction of the temple, it seemed most improbable to his hearers. The temple was constructed with massive stones. Do you see it there, verse 1? It was a magnificent building. They couldn't imagine that it wouldn't always be standing. As Jesus spoke of the destruction of the temple, it seemed as probable to suggest at the beginning of September that the twin towers of the World Trade Center would collapse. Who'd have believed that if you'd have suggested it? But the temple was destroyed. And that, says Jesus, points to the final moment in history when he will return. Look at verse 24. But in those days, following that distress, that is the distress where the temple falls, following that distress, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from the sky, and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. At that time, men will see the Son of Man, Jesus himself, coming in clouds with great power and glory. Do you see, the destruction of the temple is a pledge that Jesus will return. That is the next major event on the world stage. When? We don't know, verse 32, but it will happen. So we're to watch. Not be sceptical. We're to be about the work of the household, verse 34. Indeed, we will get on with the work of the gospel only if we're convinced that Jesus will return one day. Because the future belongs to Jesus, the present is full of significance. Because there is going to be a day of reckoning, what I do today matters. If there was no day to look forward to, it really doesn't matter how you live. Knowing that Jesus will return gives meaning to what I do today. One day he'll come back. There'll be an audit, an account of our lives. So like faithful servants, verse 34, we're to get on with the task he's told us to do. And primarily, we're to be about the task of keeping watch. Do you see how he says that he leaves, verse 34, he leaves his house and puts his servants in charge, each with his assigned task, and tells the one at the door to keep watch. Therefore, keep watch, verse 35. So again, here's how to use your diary. Don't be a skeptic. Don't look in your diary and conclude, no, Jesus will never return, actually. See the two extremes? We either go to one extreme or the other. We're either looking for the date or we're actually closing the diary and saying, no, he's never going to come. No, finally, he says, third, watch, don't sleep, verses 36 and 37. If he comes suddenly, don't let him find you sleeping. What I say to you, I say to everyone, watch. See, we don't know when, but we do know it will happen. So be on constant alert. Don't be caught napping. But what does it mean to watch? Well, I was massively helped by another preacher called Nigel Stiles, who points to the bookends of chapter 13. See, this magnificent chapter is propped up by two stories of two women. One at the end of chapter 12, the other at the beginning of chapter 14. And as we look at the two women, we discover what it means to keep watch. At first glance, we think the women couldn't be more different. The one at the end of chapter 12 is a widow. The one at the beginning of chapter 14 is a woman of, well, shall we say, of questionable character. The widow at the end of chapter 12 put 2 pence in the collection plate. Chapter 12, verse 42. The other woman, this woman of questionable character, poured perfume over Jesus, perfume that was worth around £25,000, a year's wages, chapter 14, verses 3 to 5. The widow was shy. The other woman, well, she seemed very bold in her actions in chapter 14. These women seem so different. They are, in fact, both great examples of disciples who watch and who don't sleep. because both women were wholehearted in their actions towards the Lord. Both these women loved the Lord with all their heart. See, look to chapter 12 and verse 44. See what we say of what is said of this woman, this widow. Jesus refers to the others who'd put in so much money in the collection plate. They all gave out of their wealth, chapter 12, verse 44. But she, out of her poverty, put in everything. All she had to live on. She put in everything. And then see how the same thing happens in chapter 14, verse 8, as we flip over. One wonderful expression. As again, the disciples are looking down on this woman. Well, we don't know what her past was, but they didn't like her. Look what Jesus says, verse 8. She did what she could. The widow, she put in everything. This other woman, she did what she could. You see, to watch is to be a wholehearted follower of Jesus Christ. To watch is to be those who are devoted to Jesus Christ. In the light of the return of Christ, in the light of the fact that Jesus could return any time, even today, every day I'm to put everything into serving him. Every day I'm to do what I can in living for him. Then chapter 13, verse 35, whether he comes in the evening or at midnight or when the cock crows or at dawn, we'll be ready for him. When Jesus returns, can you think of anything better than knowing that you gave him everything, that you did what you could? He doesn't ask for anything more, just to give everything, just to do what you can. I think it was Lord Shaftesbury who said something like this: in the past 40 years, I've not spent one waking hour that has not been influenced by the return of Jesus Christ. That's what it means to watch. I love him so much, I'll serve him with all my heart. Believer, here is how to use your diary. Watch, don't sleep. Watch, have your diary driven by doing things that please the Lord. Give your time, your week, every day to investing in his things. Be wholehearted in following Jesus Christ. Let that drive how you fill your time. There will be some here today who are not yet wholehearted followers of Jesus Christ. Well, this is for you as well. Do you see at the end, verse 37, Mark chapter 13, verse 37? Jesus says, what I say to you, I say to everyone. Watch. See, what Jesus says to his disciples who are listening in, he says to everyone. It's all the same. Watch. Are you ready to meet your Maker? Well, that's the question I often ask people. More often than not, when I ask people that question, they say to me, well, I hope so. Well, I hope so. Well, I hope so is not definite enough when we're talking about these things. You can't have eternity hanging on, I hope so. The return of Jesus Christ is not only the biggest moment in history to come, it is the most crucial moment in your life. There's no second chance when Jesus Christ returns. If I'm not ready, I'm doomed. I hope so. Are you ready? Rather than I hope so, we'd love to tell you how you can join hundreds of us here, say, yes, I am ready. Not because I'm a good person, but because I've put my hands in the hands of the one who died for me to forgive me. Not I hope so, but yeah, I'm certain. I'm looking forward to the day he returns. Don't put it off. It could be tomorrow. I'm not going to say it is. We don't know when. But if you have been putting it off, and today you've said, no, that really makes sense. I mustn't put it off any longer. Will you tell the Lord as we pray in a moment, I'm going to start today with you. And if you've never really thought these things through properly, will you take a booklet? Just Luke's Gospel. But in the front it has a little bit more about the things that Jesus would want you to know about how you can go from saying, I hope so, to I'm certain. I'm looking forward to his return. Just take one of these on the way out from me. Just say, yeah, I'd like to know more. I'd like a booklet, anything. Just hold your hand out and I'll give you one. Let's turn to prayer now. Well, a moment of silence for us to make our own response. If you're already a believer, already following the Lord Jesus Christ, ask him to make you wholehearted in that. To be able to remember these words of these women. She put in everything. She did what she could. And if you're not yet a believer, then an opportunity for you to say to the Lord, I want to start serving you. No one knows about that day or hour. Be on your guard. Be alert. Watch. What I say to you, I say to everyone. Watch. Make us watchful, Lord. Make us ready for that day that is going to come. May we have the joy of knowing that when you do return, we can look back on our lives and say, we did what we could. We put everything into serving you. And we ask it for your name's sake and for your glory. Amen.